State ascoltando SBS Italian.
During World War II, over 4,000 Australian soldiers were signed for war, but they never fired a weapon. Their characteristic is that they were aliens. They were non-British subjects. They were born in different countries. And this is the topic of a new book. The new book is called Soldiers and Aliens, Men in the Australian Army's Employment Companies. And the author is June Factor. June, welcome to SBS Italian.
Thank you.
June, can you talk about this incredible number of aliens in the Australian Army?
Yes. Well, Australia, while it was settled as a British colony, by the time the Second World War broke out in 1939, there were many people from a variety of nationalities. I've calculated over 40 nationalities, and a number of them found their way one way, or were found because it was conscription, one way or another, into what were called the employment companies. They started off being called labour companies, and the name got changed to employment, which sounds better. I also wonder, because there was also a Labour government and they may not have wanted their name to be used in this way. These employment companies were soldiers in every respect, uniform, pay, regulations, but were never armed and they were not sent overseas. They were really part of the labour force of the army, which was, you know, very, very much needed. So they helped work on the wharves. They drove trucks with goods. They did all sorts of different kinds of labour, and they're spread across the whole of the country, more or less. And they have largely, not entirely, been forgotten, but largely. And there were at least among them the nationalities. There were at least. There are at least 12 languages spoken, and I can't remember, I did write down how many nationalities, but there, a large number of these men, almost all of them in fact, were not originally English speakers, and they didn't come from Britain, or most of them were not born here, although some were.
How the Australian government solved the contradiction of enemy of the state? So from what I understand, well, like there were plenty of these soldiers, they were Italians. So from one side, you had many Italians in the internment camps, and on the other side, you had them in the army.
Yes, absolutely, you did. And there were Italians interned as well, on suspicion that they were going to, you know, they came from the wrong side, as it were. But I think a couple of things applied. One was, of course, the great need for the labour force. And secondly, with that went a recognition that not all Italians necessarily supported the fascist regime in Italy. So there were well over, I calculated, more than 3,800 Italians in Australia, and an interesting number end up in the Australian Army. I remember one of the men I interviewed, a lovely fellow called Charlie DiPrano, and he said, "I wanted to fight fascists with a gun. I wanted to destroy them, and all I did was load and unload trains."
Speaking of which, what exactly was their, let's say, their targets? Were they just basic labour?
Yes, they were basic labour. I mean, they were dressed, they were soldiers. They had uniform, they had to salute, soldiers pay and soldiers leave and all the rest. But they never, in fact, were ever given the sniff of a gun. There's a lovely story of one of the companies when a truck drives in loaded with rifles. And there's great excitement in this company. I forget one of the alien companies. At last, they thought, at last, they're going to teach us how to shoot and so on. But it was a mistake. And the truck was turned around and drove out somewhere else. So they were never armed, but they did a lot of the hard work that was needed. I mean, they worked on the wharves. They loaded and unloaded trains. They drove trucks that carried storage. They were a labour force, but they were soldiers. They had to salute. There's a lovely story from one company which had a lot of German and Austrian men in it. And they were a bit taken on a march. I forget where they were. Not one of the capital cities. They were somewhere in a country town. And the sergeant who was taking them on the march said, well, I want you to see. Well, the only songs they knew, of course, were German and Italian songs. So that's what they sang. So they marched through this, I forget which of the country towns it was, in Australian uniform, singing German and Italian songs. Sergeant wanted them to sing. They sang.
I suppose he wasn't very happy with the result.
Well, no. Well, he probably was perfectly happy as he knew neither language.
Fantastic.
So he would have no idea what they were singing.
Were they just assigned to Australia and Australian states, or did some of them manage to join the war effort overseas?
You mean to join the fighting forces?
Yes.
Of the ones that I canvassed, I think I would have got less than the fingers of one hand of the number who actually, because quite a lot wanted to. Quite a number. I've got lots of expressions of exasperation and so on, saying, you know, I want to fight. I don't want to just be here loading and unloading trains. And a few did manage to join fighting forces, particularly if they had a special skill that might have been of use, but the majority not. And I think I should also say the majority didn't want to. The majority, I don't think, was yearning to rush to the front.
Who were these men?
They were people who, some of them had been in Australia, families had been in Australia for generations. Some of them were much more recently arrived. People like my father arrived in 1938. The war breaks out in 1939. He's in the army by, I think, 1941. Now, my father was a passionate anti-fascist, and this is what he wanted to do. But it was very difficult for my mother, of course. Yes. My father, my parents, Polish Jews. My father was interested in the world, what was happening in the world. He was very far-sighted. Unlike a lot of people who said, oh, yeah, you know, nothing will really happen, you know. He saw the war coming and persuaded my mother to migrate to the other side of the world, to Australia.
Speaking of these new recruits, you told us most of them were born in different countries. Was their conscription completely voluntary, or forced in some cases?
By its definition, conscription is not voluntary. But what I think you're asking me is, as was everybody conscripted? No, not everybody. I mean, there are a number of interesting stories that I picked up when I was doing interviews. I remember one fellow who said he worked in a fruit shop in Melbourne and his boss was also Italian. He got called up, but his boss did not. Now, his boss was older, but he was also running a business. He was running something that the government wanted to maintain. So, and I think there are quite a few situations like that where more likely younger men, not married men, and people who didn't actually run the business, that though the business didn't close. So, you know, the fruit shop remained open. And there are a whole lot of stories like that. And, of course, those were the people that just come from people I interviewed. And you have to multiply that by an unknown number.
It's interesting that decades before the terminology multiculturalism appeared, Australia already had a multicultural army.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. I think I make that point in the book. It is fascinating. Yeah, the military, well, I think everywhere, is one of the most conservative institutions in a country, built on decades, if not centuries, of tradition, full of regimentation and rules and so on. And yet it is this, in the Australian Army, you get, you know, so many immigrants, so many people of different nationalities. I mean, I think I worked out that by November 1943, there would have been about 41 nationalities. Men from 41, I don't even know how many, I can't now count to 41 with nationalities, but there were an extraordinary number of people from all over the world. Not much, of course, from nothing, I don't recall anything from Africa. Very, very few from Latin America. And a large number of Chinese. They have a whole Chinese company in the Australian Army. Not many Australian Chinese seem to know that, and a lot from Europe. And the Europeans are scattered across a number of companies.
What is the biggest surprise that you encountered during your research?
Oh, now there's there's a question to ponder. I think, I don't know what the biggest surprise was, but I know one of the things that surprised me was the relative flexibility of the Australian state, of the Australian government, that in a country which was supposed to be British to its bootstraps, is one of the expressions that was used, was able to intelligently take advantage of not just those who are Anglos in the company. Now, I have to tell you that the Australian actions followed the British. They were doing the same in Britain. In fact, Britain was a sort of model, I think, in some ways, for what the Australian army was doing. But, I mean, this was a case of necessity. I mean, they needed men, and they weren't all going to be of British origin. And it's interesting because there's a great debate in official circles about the document you have to sign, which says, I can't remember the exact wording, but, you know, that you are a loyal... Many of them weren't citizens. They still hadn't been naturalised. So they weren't required to sign this document. And they're still in the army.
June Fecta, thank you for telling us this largely forgotten story in your book, Soldiers and Aliens. Thank you again.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Volete ascoltare altre storie come questa? Potete trovarle su Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify o ovunque scarichiate i vostri podcast.